Hello and welcome to another podcast from The Edge with me, Peter Bruce, where I try to explain the things I don't really understand. I issue this edition, and if you don't mind, I'll need to bring the subject up a lot over the next couple of weeks because there are so many angles to it, is industrial policy. More particularly, I want to try and understand what's under the sort of rubric of President Cyril Ramaphosa's plan for a massive new growth that transforms the shape of our economy and industry. What exactly Trade, Industry and Competition Minister Ibrahim Patel is doing to make it happen. To my uninformed eye, he may be making irreversible mistakes, picking on sectoral champions like steel and chickens and others, and creating conditions around them which, while I'm no doubt well-intended, may have far-reaching and unintended consequences. Today we're going to talk about metals, steel and aluminium, and I have with me Volker Schutter, a German investor and international metals trader, particularly in aluminium. And Volker, I don't want to misrepresent you before going on, but you've been doing business in South Africa for many years.
Yes, Peter. First of all, thank you very much for having me on your podcast. Great pleasure. Yes, I actually been in business here in South Africa since 1985. Trading in non-ferrous metals, that's mainly aluminium, copper and brass, but the focus being on aluminium. But in the meantime, out of that business in South Africa, we have offices in Shanghai and quite globally, not fully globally, but quite global, active in the non-ferrous metal trade.
And you're also invested quite heavily in Hulamin, the Peter Maritzburg-based, what would one call it? It's a fabricator now of aluminium.
Yes, that's quite recently, you could say, not for a long, long time, because, let's say, Hulamin plays a big role in the South African market, or what they were doing wrong, I must say. And I see good potential in the company, but changes have to happen there. And I was thinking or hoping that I can do from within, expedite such change. So I've become, let's say, one of the bigger investors in Hulamin in recent times. And I sit on two sides in a certain way.
Yes. You brought to my attention, and I'm very grateful for you having done it, the fact that very quietly, under the radar, on the very last day of 2020, December 31st, the Government Gazette published the introduction of a massive new import duty on products that compete with products that Hulamin makes, which I think was, I'm not sure if I'm right now, the products were aluminium plate and sheets. I wonder why you think they did that and why they did that so quietly.
Well, why they did it so quietly, I think that touches on the subject that you raised at the beginning, and that is the fact that there is a shift in government policies in their economic policies, and that is done very quietly and subtle without great discussions within government, as far as I can see, and certainly done without great discussion in the business side and community. So I feel not comfortable that this is done. So, 31st of December is certainly a perfect date to publish something and nobody notices. And so far, I have seen only one article in the paper picking up on it. Yeah. But, Peter, if you allow me, because it's such an important issue, that I, let's say, go a bit more in detail on this introduction of duties. This is an introduction of so-called aluminium flat rolled products that covers everything that is a sheet, a strip, a foil, and plate that has been used in the aluminium downstream industry. And the duty that has been introduced is 15%, which is a maximum allowed by WTO rules and regulations. This introduction of duty has been done by ITEC, stroke the government, on the request of Hulamin.
In which you're a shareholder.
Of which I'm a shareholder. It certainly will have a positive effect on Hulamin's share price on the short term. There, I have no doubt on it. That's great news as a shareholder. But in the long term, in the downstream industry, I think it will have major negative impact. And that's what I'm concerned about, because I'm not only a shareholder in Hulamin, I also have downstream investments in the aluminium industry. So they will be severely affected. And we have been fighting this application of Hulamin for an introduction of duty for quite a while. It's the third application in the last 10 years by Hulamin. Two of them have been outright rejected by government, and now all of a sudden it is accepted, and it's accepted 100% as Hulamin wants it, and let's say to the maximum level of duty. So I think one can call this a shift in policy. If you go from no twice to fully yes. Yeah. So that's the situation that we have. In addition to flat rolled products, you have so-called extruded products, which are tubes, profiles, bars, etc. Hulamin had already some 3 years ago received import duties on their request, also of 15% on these extrusion products. So today, all aluminium semi-finished products have a duty of 15% when imported.
But what is so interesting is that this comes at a time when the Department of Trade and Industry is also doing the same, much the same sort of thing on the steel side. It recently tried to, or has imposed an 18% duty. I think that's 15 plus 3 on hot rolled coil imports into South Africa. And it is also banning or trying to make as difficult as possible the export of scrap from South Africa. And what it tells me is that what Ibrahim Patel, the minister concerned, is trying to do is that he's decided that he is going to grow local capacity in steel and aluminium. And the way he's going to do it is, on the one hand, by keeping feedstock in the country, because people, and by feedstock I mean scrap for people who melt scrap metal in arc furnaces, and keeping out products that may compete with either Hulamin's profiles or sheets, or ArcelorMittal's or the steel products of any other steel maker. So he's trying to organize. It's not very sophisticated, but it's, you know, the intent is to almost, you said, pulling up the drawbridge away in your castle. You know, you can't come in and we're going to do everything for ourselves from within here. I can't help feeling that there's something wrong with that, and I can't put my finger on it. But what is obvious to me is that if you put up a duty, that means that the people who are making the product that you're protecting inside the country can sell it inside the country for more money. In other words, prices will rise.
Look, Peter, first of all, prices will rise. That's no doubt. But let's say you have two issues here, and you take the picture of the drawbridge that has been raised. I would rather take it like a candle that burns from both sides. Meaning, if you are a big, let's say, producer of steel or aluminium products, you produce radiators or fridges or whatever out of steel or aluminium, you are now under attack from two sides. Your cost of raw material will increase due to the duties. Even if you use local material, the price of the local product will go up, no doubt.
Yeah.
And secondly, you are then restricted in the sale of your scrap, which is a very important cost factor. You have to sell it at a reduced price to some local processor or company instead of selling it at an international acceptable price level. So you have two sides which actually now put you under pressure. Now, that's one thing. The other thing is, what Patel, or what, let's say, government is doing here, they're protecting, let's say, Mittal in the steel industry and their employees. And at the side of aluminium, they protect Hulamin. Hulamin employs 1,700 people. Certainly very important employment factor for Pietermaritzburg.
And let's not forget that its majority, its biggest shareholder is the government.
It's the IDC with 30%, yes. But they are not a happy shareholder, I can tell you that, because they lost billions on this investment on Hulamin. But you protect now 1,700 people in Pietermaritzburg at the expense of 10 or 20 times that number in the downstream industry.
Yeah.
And so what you want to achieve, you only achieved for one party, being Hulamin or Mittal, and you achieve just the opposite of that with the downstream industry. Because you will say, yeah, but will the prices will go up, and will that actually really help Hulamin, for example? It's very easy to say, yes, the prices will go up, because you have an example. We had 3-4 years ago, as I mentioned, an introduction of import duties on extrusions on the request of Hulamin. There are two producers of extrusions in South Africa. The biggest now is Wispeco, and the second one is being Hulamin. Hulamin asked for that duty, Wispeco didn't. They got the 50% duty. In the meantime, a year later, they closed their second plant in Olifantsfontein, and their business is not running well at all. So even with the import duty, the number of employees at Hulamin have been reduced sharply on that side. So exactly opposite of what wanted or was planned to be achieved. The prices have gone up, but Hulamin has not really achieved any benefit of it by bigger volume or higher prices. So it's, if you look at that part, it's a complete fiasco. You have achieved nothing whatsoever for the whole industry. You only achieved higher prices for the downstream industry. That's all that you have achieved.
And it's interesting, because the downstream industry is in a way not obvious. It doesn't have these huge plants, and it's not, you know, they're not big projects, but they are often small businesses doing quite complicated work with metal, aluminium or steel, and they do a lot of exporting. They get contracts in other countries to supply shapes or finished products or semi-finished products, I presume. And as you say, these people employ a lot of. I mean, they've created a lot of jobs, and they've been around forever.
Much more. There's certainly, this industry, the downstream industry, employs much, much more people than Hulamin itself or AMSA, stroke Mittal. Huh?
Yeah.
So there's no doubt on that. And one thing we have to accept, and Hulamin or Mittal has a more open ear at government than these various smaller and medium-sized companies have. They have a better way of being heard and get their point of view through at government. That's a fact we have to accept. Mittal in particular, but also Hulamin, are very good of making their point noted by government.
Yes. Well, they have the phone numbers. In fact, Score Metals, if I'm not mistaken, is also owned by the IDC.
A huge loss. So you would think government, being a shareholder in Score or in Hulamin, would have, let's say, a bigger driving motivation to actually go into it in detail, but they don't. That's what is surprising to me. The IDC accepting their investment as it stands at Hulamin, they accept management as they run the company for the last 12 years. They lost billions of rand in their investment on Hulamin.
Why would they continue, do you think, with the same management? I mean, the price of Hulamin's share has, I think, fallen from, in 2008, 150 rand, and I think it's worth about 2 rand today. How much did you buy for? How much have you lost on?
Sorry, Peter, you caught me. I actually haven't lost, because I bought it at the bottom, pretty much.
Oh, did you? Oh,
I bought it around 1 rand. So at the moment, you could say I could smile, because it's not
true.
But I'm not smiling. I'll be very honest, I'm not smiling, because Hulamin has great potential, and one can go into it in a separate podcast. But it's not been utilized. They're just, you know, they have big problems. They have run 3 years big losses, and instead of doing what they know has to be done, they just now get protection from government. You must understand that we already in South Africa pay substantially more for aluminium semi-finished products from Hulamin in South Africa than we would pay in Europe. We have a company that buys Hulamin products in Europe and ships it back to South Africa because it's cheaper. So
but does that mean that they're dumping in Europe?
Well, they have in America been charged twice for dumping. They now at the moment have a 9% dumping duty on their product. And I don't know what the final outcome is. There is no doubt, and Schuderman has even admitted to it. The question is, do they dump by 10% or by 30% in America or Europe? So that's the only argument. There's no question, and I'd be happy to prove to anybody, and Schuderman knows it, that they sell the prices, sell products at prices higher in Europe, in South Africa than in America or Europe. And with the duty now, that will go even up more. So they cover their inefficiencies by now ways of raising prices here locally.
Hulamin in their, on their website boasts that you know, that it's a major supplier of fabricated aluminium, and that 60% of its sales are exports. You know, and applying for import duties is an odd thing to do if you're an exporter, but presumably then those exports are made at sort of giveaway prices. In other words, because we have no choice but to buy at their prices in South Africa, but they would sell below the local market price in Germany or in Europe or the US, which is a classic description of dumping.
Well, I don't want to go into it, but clearly fact is they sell at a higher price here in South Africa.
Can I just ask you, they cannot
help the local industry here, that's for sure.
What, in your experience, just to turn to steel for a moment, there's a lot of steel, you know, being made, and I cannot understand what the rationale is for trying to impose or renew a sort of holding duty. There's a particular kind of duty that you can do, which is temporary, to protect an industry. The government has reimposed this duty on hot rolled coil imports. And hot rolled coil is important because people roll it out into all sorts of things, and it affects the construction industry. For instance, if you want a corrugated iron roof, you know, your corrugated iron roof starts off as a piece of hot rolled coil and gets treated, and et cetera. And it's actually very hard to get corrugated iron for roofing now, particularly in some parts of the country. And it's because the imports aren't coming in, and apparently because AMSA, ArcelorMittal, is unable to supply the market. So it's being protected, and it's incapable of supplying the market at the same time. And there are lots of complaints about it. Can you also, in steel, buy South African steel more cheaply? Is it cheaper to buy South African steel in Europe and re-import it back here?
Well, I have not done that, so it would be ambitious for me to say so. But I think, you will find enough people to confirm it, that the prices that are being paid in South Africa are higher than international prices due to the duties. And here again, like in aluminium, you have only one producer, being Mittal, who is part of the biggest steel producer in the world. I think it would be a very easy exercise to get prices here in South Africa and go to Mittal in Europe or Mittal in Brazil or wherever and check their prices there. But you have a huge problem in the steel industry in South Africa. It's well known and been expressed by various parties and organized organizations, the employers, organization, etc., writing to government and to Mittal, saying we have a major problem here that affects our downstream industry and actually reduces employment in that industry. So I find it amazing that it's so clear and that you just protect two big companies there.
The plan, as I understand it, is to say, well, this is short-term pain, because what we're doing here is we now have the beginnings of a huge free trade area in Africa, in the rest of Africa, and that what we're trying to do is save these big base industries like steel and aluminium to serve this new market when it becomes fully functional. And I suppose the question to ask is whether one shouldn't possibly wait a little while for the market to develop, because only two, as far as I understand, only two very small countries have ratified it. One is some small islands off West Africa. I don't even think we've ratified the right protocols in South Africa yet. And to right now start to protect these industries as if they were going to be vital springboards into this market might be just a little bit naive, because I presume, Volker, that if you have a market in Egypt, or if you've got a market, if you're a steelmaker and you have a market in Sudan or Ghana or wherever, that you don't just give it away for nothing.
No, absolutely not. Why should I? And look, this agreement certainly holds great potential for South Africa in particular, as we have an industrial base. There's no doubt. But I think we must be realistic. It will take a long time till this actually really has been felt and business really being generated from there. So, and I'm not talking here now 6 months. I rather talk here 3-5 years. So to now protect now industries that you want to make good use of in 5 or 6 years might be a bit, strange approach.
Give me an example then. So what would you do? Because you can't, if you're saying, look, there is this great big thing out there that we want to be part of, the Africa Free Trade Area, or African Continental Free Trade Area, I think it's called.
Yeah.
How do you preserve Hulamin, make it stronger, while that market gets itself kind of ready? How do you preserve Score Metals? How do you preserve AMSA? What would your plan be for Hulamin? You said it was a topic for another discussion, but what are the outlines? What would you like to do to Hulamin?
Okay, look, I would like to take Hulamin as an example, not so much Score, because I really don't know it too well, and metal less, but let's work on aluminium and on Hulamin. Look, first of all, you must understand Hulamin exports 60% of their products, so they are internationally competitive. If they make much money in the international trade or not, I cannot judge in clear detail. It's certainly not super profitable for them, but they can compete international. So if they can compete in America and in Europe and in Thailand and wherever, why can't they compete in their local market? That's the first thing. The second thing, what would I do with Hulamin? I think it's super easy because Hulamin knows what they need to do. I would, first of all, I must admit, change the top management immediately, because they're now fiddled on this company for 12 years with no success, and they know what to do, but they're not doing it. So any private business, you would change management. So that's the first thing I would do.
Yeah.
Secondly, I would certainly take that plant and reduce its range of products. Now, due to the history of Hulamin in the pre-85 and 95 periods, when South Africa was under sanctions, Hulamin had more or less the task to produce everything for anybody in South Africa. So aircraft industry, defense industry, packaging, automotive, building, anything. That's super difficult. But nowadays, they still do the same. They still run the same basically policy as previous to 95.
Yeah.
And not possible. So you need to reduce your range of products. And they know exactly which products that should be. For example, for the can industry, which is a big industry in South Africa. So you have to reduce your product range and focus on that, and then be globally and in your own market competitive. The third thing that you need to do is you have to make better use of scrap. They bought, let's say 5 years ago, a plant from the UK, Hurtwitch is the name, to recycle used beverage cans. But this machine doesn't really work as it's supposed to be. That's, again, another podcast. But nevertheless, you need to get this working, because scrap is the best thing that you can use. And used beverage cans is in ample supply here. At the moment, it's exported because Hulamin doesn't use it to the extent. And they don't admit that the machine doesn't really work as it should be. But the fact of it is that they don't use it. They don't use scrap as they should. And if they would do it, they would reduce their cost substantially.
Yeah.
So this is three things. Number four is you need to look at your cash management, but that's
better. But you bring up a very interesting point, Volker. The extent to which the government is trying to almost recreate the conditions that industry prospered in under apartheid. In other words, you know, we want to make everything ourselves, basically, and stop importing from the horrible Chinese or whoever they might, we might be importing from. And it's an odd thing to do because that economy worked, and but you can't copy it now because you're missing one. You're missing the main ingredient. The main ingredient, it seems to me, was apartheid itself. It guaranteed you a supply of cheap labor. And yeah. You don't have cheap labor anymore. And without cheap labor, you can't do all of the things in a small economy like this. We're not a big market for anything, frankly. It seems to me to be the heart of foolishness to even try and reproduce the old Afrikaner industrial miracle. You know?
Yeah, Peter, I mean, to me, it's unbelievable that we go back in time, basically, with certain policies. And when you say the economy worked well, yes, it worked well for a few people or companies, which were highly protected. But for a lot of people, let's say 95%, it didn't work well, the economy. So luckily, we found a different way, and we now a different economy and a different society. And the policies of 1980 don't work now in 2020. You cannot do this. And now you come to the international environment, basically. It is such a pity that I see also in other places in the world that there is this clearly visible movement from the free trade and open market policies to now protect your own turf. If you protect it against Chinese, that's always the first step, and then you get to others and so on. So you open the door of, let's say, you start the process of closing the doors for a competition from outside. So I find that a very alarming process, and South Africa seems to be joining that process, which I would say started in the States, most likely, at least in the metal industry.
It certainly did. In fact, I read the other day American aluminium producers are warning the new incoming Biden administration not to lower any barriers to Chinese competition. Otherwise, they would begin cutting jobs.
Peter, this story in America is an amazing story. Again, if we look at the aluminium industry, the Trump administration in 2018, early 2018, introduced import duties on aluminium rolled products. So that was the first step.
Yeah.
Second step was shortly afterwards they introduced anti-dumping duties against Chinese rolled products. Now you must understand, and they were quite substantial, you must understand that the American aluminium industry, which is asking for these duties, cannot supply the total demand of the American market. So there need to be imports. So now the Chinese were closed out, and that meant that now all of a sudden from all countries, from Brazil to South Africa to Europe to Middle East, started to export bigger volumes to the States, certainly at higher prices. So the prices went up, and now other people were supplying into the market. So what did the Americans do? Now they're investigating or having a process of anti-dumping charges against 17 other countries and I think 30 mills. They're now exporting to America. But, I mean, you just mess up the whole market. The prices have gone up. The suppliers have changed. You now got three different duties, and you still haven't got a grip on it. Before, you had a very well-balanced market. Yes, the American mills didn't hit 100%, but they couldn't supply 100% of the demand. Yeah. And now, next thing is, in Europe, we now also have the same process starting. So in Brazil, the same process is starting. So everybody now brings up his bridge, as you say, to protect their own turf. And I think this is not the way to have create employment, if in Brazil, in America, or in South Africa. I think we have done in the last 20 years, in South Africa in particular, we have done particularly well with an open market policy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's taken a government run by somebody with actual business experience to begin to reverse that.
Yes, I mean, Patel is an economist. He certainly knows what he's doing, but I think he just listens to one side of the story. And again, we go to the beginning of your podcast here, is that there is no discussion. I cannot find within government, in parliament, or within the business community, any discussion on this. I just hear some little voice here complaining or whatever, but there is, you know, if I change my economic policy to a more closed economy, then there must be, in a democratic environment, a discussion on it with all parties involved. You can't just, on the 31st of December, Christmas Eve, push through some duties. That is, I think, is short-sighted and is a mistake. There needs to be discussion. If everybody then agrees that this is the best way, well, then fair enough, we have to accept it.
Yeah. I mean, what happens, of course, is that, you know, if you challenge the government, and that I was talking about Cyril Ramaphosa there, not Ibrahim Patel, but Ramaphosa closing up the economy in this way is very disappointing, I think, even though he might have in mind the Africa Free Continental Free Trade Area one day. The fact is that his trade and industry minister is moving way too quickly. Is getting ahead of the program. That's because the program typically for, you know, the ANC governments is always, you know, implemented very slowly, if at all. If you only do half of it, if you only do the blocking half, you end up with, you know, all sorts of unintended consequences. I just wondered also, just finally, you know, you've got offices, as you say, in the rest of the world. Are we not alone, what you seem to be saying? We're not alone in pulling up the drawbridge, that there's a wider sort of feeling that that free trade isn't the answer any longer to people's problems, that globalization isn't the answer. It's an interesting proposition because it's happening at the same time as the Chinese economy really begins to start pumping again and taking off.
Peter, I think, yes, there is a global trend, but that global trend is particular focus on Chinese producers and suppliers. And, there might be industries and points where this is valid, I can't say, but again, if I look at steel or if I look at aluminium, the Chinese have identified 30 years ago aluminium to be a very critical component or commodity in the industrialization of their country. Yeah. And they have put huge investments, private and government investments, into that industry. They have built phenomenal big plants, very efficient, very modern plants with machinery all over, imported from Europe, America, and so on. So state of the art and big volume. So they have become super competitive, whereby, let's say, I don't know when Mittal in South Africa have really invested new equipment into their plant.
Well, they haven't for ages. I mean, they're shutting down plant rather than...
Correct. And they have not invested. You cannot be competitive against people who really take money in their hands and invest it if you don't do the same and stay ahead of the technical game. And that applies to Mittal here in South Africa. It applies to Hulamin. If you don't invest, and it applies to European or American plants. The last European rolling mill that has been put into action was, I think, in 96. That's 26 years ago in Alu North. I mean, it's the last plant they have really put up in Europe. So, I mean, yes, you have fallen behind, and now you try to protect yourself by building up these duty borders. That's not the answer, I would say. And I would say nobody will win out of that. You have to keep pace, and you have to invest. Then you can compete with these people. Huh?
In the trading business, you're taking orders and fulfilling orders, as it were. Where is in the aluminium business now? I mean, where does South Africa rank as a reliable producer of aluminium?
Look, Hulamin, technically speaking, is a good plant. They produce a very good product. I think one must really say that. Yeah. And they have certain products that they export play a role in the international market. But let's say in America, I would say their market share is 1%. In Europe, it's 1%. So they are minute by international standards. But that's nothing wrong with it. You don't have to be the biggest. If you're not the biggest, you have to specialize, and you have to, let's say, pick the raisins in the market, as I call it. And I think you will understand what I mean. You don't have to be the biggest. Just pick where you're good at, technically speaking, and then nurture that and build that and invest in that area and become a global leader in that respect. But don't try now to be the jack of all trades and master of none. And there you will not succeed. So internationally, Hulamin is a small plant. To give an idea, the capacity stands around about 250,000 tons of aluminium per annum at Hulamin. There are now a couple of plants in Asia being built with 2 million tons per annum. So, I mean, that tells you all. And on the extrusion side,
And where does this aluminium that's being produced, where does it sort of live, you know, before it's actually used? Is it on the water? Is it in storage on land? How does it, you know, presumably you've got to keep your plant running whether you've got orders or not. What happens to all of the aluminium products that are produced? Are they instantly bought, or is it a longer chain?
Look, first of all, aluminium is a commodity, and it's traded in various places, on the LME in particular, but also in China. And it's today, like gold or other commodities, a wonderful vehicle to invest in. So a lot of aluminium sits in warehouses, and it's owned by London, New Yorker, or South African traders and investors. So it's a wonderful investment. To keep money in, you pay a bit of storage fee, but less than what you pay for money that you keep in Europe in the bank account, where you have to pay negative interest. So it's a good place to store money and invest in. Yeah. But then a mill has to run. It needs to have a certain capacity, and when it's produced, it should be shipped and supplied to customers. I want to see the same applies to steel, which is not so close to us, but to the aluminium. I want to see a successful industry here. You must keep one thing in mind. Aluminium is being produced from bauxite, alumina. That's pretty much the only commodity that South Africa does not have. So that's all been imported. But it would be nice if we can make it in a successful industry here for the local downstream industry and then export as well. But what has been done now is not the right way to achieve this. That I'm very, very certain of.
Volker Schutte, thank you very much for sharing your insight and your knowledge with us.
Peter, thanks very much for giving me the opportunity. It was great fun.
It's been an absolute pleasure and a lesson in aluminium and metals to me. Thank you, Volker, very much, and go well.
Yes, same to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, that's it for now. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did, and it was a real lesson for me in an industry that I don't know enough about, but that I'm very interested in. And we need to closely follow in South Africa what is happening to our industrial base. The policies that are being followed by the government are being done almost by stealth in a way. I think Volker Schutte was absolutely right to say there needs to be more discussion. Are we doing the right things? You know, it may be that we're doing the right things in some sectors and not in other sectors. And we only get it right by being open and transparent and interested in what's happening around us. This is not about just the small businesses that are being hurt by increased tariffs. This is about you and me and the products that we need in our daily lives. But until next week, I'll see you again. Keep well. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.